Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. We're here to talk about ways to improve the quality of our lives. Today, in the first segment of our program, we're going to talk about removing metabolic barriers to weight loss. And then we're going to talk about energy, why we don't have enough physical energy, why we're so fatigued as a society, and the role of stress, environmental toxins, hormone imbalances, electromagnetic fields, how does that actually impact upon us? All that coming up. Well, normally at this time, I'd be giving you some of the latest in health and nutrition update information, but I have so much that my guest wants to share that I thought, all right, I would start by going to our guest, and then if we run with a little extra time, then I'll give you some of our latest in health and nutrition update. My guest is Dr. Joseph DeBay. He's a certified clinical nutritionist and a certified chiropractor, sports practitioner. And he practices in Manhattan and in Great Neck, New York. Nice to have you with us today, Joseph.
Thank you, Gary. Very nice to be with you.
Joseph, many individuals have difficulty losing weight despite following a strict diet and exercising regularly. It's common knowledge that an underactive thyroid can impair weight loss, yet many of these individuals are found to have normal thyroids. Tell us what you feel is the cause of weight loss difficulty for these people, and be very descriptive and give us examples. Give us the A to Z, all right?
Okay, here we go. Millions of people have an underactive metabolism that has not been picked up with routine thyroid tests. Sometimes the thyroid is the cause of the problem itself. Other times, there's other hormones which are influencing thyroid metabolism, which result in the underactive metabolism. Let's start with a little background on the thyroid. The thyroid gland is located at the base of the neck. It produces the hormones T4 and T3. Hormones are messenger molecules which circulate throughout the body, regulating diverse bodily functions. T4 and T3 govern body temperature and metabolic rate. T3, besides being produced within the thyroid, is also produced outside the thyroid by conversion of T4. This takes place primarily in the liver. Since T4 and T3 govern the metabolic rate, which basically is the speed of chemical reactions throughout the body, if there's low levels and or activity of T4 and T3, then we have a lower body temperature and slower metabolic rate. And this translates into less energy and more body fat. It makes it more difficult to lose weight. Now, besides the thyroid being a source of the problem, we could also have imbalances in cortisol and DHEA, which are the long-acting stress hormones, and excessive levels of melatonin. All these things can result in an underactive metabolism.
That's a good answer. I appreciate that. Let's go on. How can a person determine if they have an underactive metabolism?
Well, as I mentioned, metabolism and body temperature are both controlled by the thyroid hormones. So we can take advantage of the intimate relationship between body temperature and metabolic rate. So what we do is simply to measure the body temperature. And the way this is done is that a person takes an oral mercury thermometer. They shake it down below 95 degrees before going to bed. And they leave it within arm's reach of their bed. First thing in the morning, they put the thermometer into the armpit and leave it there for 10 minutes. Then they record the temperature. And they repeat the same procedure for 7 days. And in premenopausal women who are having a menstrual cycle, they need to start recording on the second or third day of their cycle because the female hormones can also influence body temperature to some degree. Then after 7 days, what you do is you average all the temperatures together. If the temperatures come out to below 97.8, then your metabolism is low. That's a low body temperature. And the lower the temperature is, the lower your metabolic rate is as well.
Now, if melatonin spillover is ruled out as a cause of the slow metabolism, what's the next step?
Okay. If melatonin is not the cause of the problem, then it's likely that stress could be a cause of the problem. Stress can result in difficulty in losing weight. So if we have mental or emotional stress, stressful thoughts that can actually make us fat. And this is mediated through the hormones cortisol and DHEA, which are released from the adrenal or stress glands, which sit atop the kidneys. Under stress, what happens is we have an increased output of cortisol and DHEA. And cortisol and DHEA help the body to respond appropriately to stress. It helps the body to adapt to stress. But when the stress is over, cortisol and DHEA come back to baseline levels. That's what happens normally. But with prolonged stress, what happens is cortisol remains elevated and DHEA levels fall. And this causes breakdown throughout the body. There's negative consequences for the whole system. And as far as metabolism goes, high cortisol, low DHEA impacts the thyroid.
Why don't we describe first what exactly DHEA is and cortisol and how we end up manifesting cortisol and DHEA when it's high or low or balanced. So that's why I'm saying you're coming from a point of view, Joseph, knowing this material so well and being so familiar with it, you forget how many people are just lay people out there who don't have a foggy idea what cortisol is.
Okay, I'm sorry. Cortisol and DHEA are the long-acting stress hormones produced by the adrenal glands. They have diverse effects throughout the body. Cortisol plays a role in the metabolism of especially carbohydrates, but also protein and fat. Cortisol is an anti-inflammatory hormone. That's one of the effects of cortisol. It helps to regulate immune function to suppress excessive inflammation. Cortisol also helps to raise blood sugar levels. If blood sugar levels fall too low, cortisol is released to bring them back up to normal. Cortisol is largely a catabolic hormone. It causes breakdown throughout the system. It causes tissues to be broken down into smaller molecules, some of which are used for energy. DHEA has largely opposite effects. It's anabolic. It causes a building or a synthesis of tissues. And for proper health, both the hormones have to be produced in balance with each other. If we have too much cortisol, not enough DHEA, which happens under stress, then the body begins to break down. Under stress, the body attempts to conserve energy. And it does this by the stress hormones do this by lowering levels of TSH. Now, TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. It's the hormone produced by the pituitary gland, which stimulates the thyroid to manufacture and release T4 and T3. So under stress, there's a reduced signaling from the pituitary to the thyroid. Then additionally, under stress, T3 levels fall. The body slows its conversion of T4 to T3. T3 is the more active thyroid hormone. And then there's an additional way the body slows metabolism under stress. It increases the production of a counterfeit form of T3 called reverse T3. Reverse T3 is just slightly different than regular T3. It's like putting a left-handed glove onto your right hand. It won't bind to receptors properly, it won't stimulate metabolic activity, and at the same time, it stops the regular active T3 from binding to receptor sites. So this is how stress reduces metabolic rate.
All right, now, let's go a little further on this. What role does stress have overall in affecting our metabolism?
Well, stress, in addition to lowering metabolic rate through the thyroid, it affects other hormones as well. It reduces testosterone production, growth hormone production, insulin-like growth factor 1 production. All these hormones are muscle-building, fat-burning hormones. So under stress, muscle tends to break down and body fat accumulates. Then additionally, under stress with a high cortisol to DHEA ratio, we tend to develop insulin insensitivity. Insulin is a hormone that governs blood sugar metabolism, plays a role in anabolism, building tissue, and fat storage. And when there's insulin insensitivity, which means the insulin is not binding to cell receptors and functioning as powerfully as it should, the body tries to compensate by producing excessive levels of insulin. And what this does is it causes increased hunger with craving for carbohydrates, and it also causes fat storage. And insulin insensitivity in itself can lower T3 levels. And then an additional effect of cortisol, when it's elevated, is that it increases the production of estrogen, both from the ovaries and from conversion of the androgenic hormones like growth hormone. I mean like testosterone. And estrogen itself stimulates fat storage, especially around the thighs and the hips. And estrogen also interferes with the conversion of T4 to T3. So under stress, there's numerous pathways for reducing metabolic rate and increasing fat storage, reducing the production of lean, healthy tissue.
Okay, now in lay language, explain to our audience how we can rebalance our cortisol and our DHEA levels.
Okay, Gary, I'll give it a try. What we need to do is remove the precipitating stress. Now, whatever is stressing the body needs to be taken out of the picture, otherwise the body will just continue to produce elevated cortisol and reduced DHEA. So to deal with mental and emotional stress, we use various stress reduction techniques like meditation, special techniques by the Institute of Heart Math, which have been scientifically validated, shown to balance these hormones. They're very simple techniques, and they can be applied within a very short period of time. They've been shown to balance the autonomic nervous system. And it's interesting, on the subject of the autonomic nervous system and weight loss, a lot of people try to accomplish weight loss by using aids like ephedra or the Chinese herb Ma Wang. And the effect of this herb is to stimulate the autonomic nervous system, which in turn causes an increased release of cortisol. And over the long term, this is going to have negative consequences on trying to lose weight. Now, in addition to mental emotional stress, it's important to realize that there are other things that stress the body as well, like dysglycemia, which is rapid fluctuation in blood sugar levels, and inflammation. These are two of the most common sources of stress in addition to mental emotional stress. Dysglycemia, or swings in blood sugar, often has its roots in dietary choices. If people eat too many carbohydrates, especially refined carbohydrates like bread, bagels, pasta, muffins, this can cause a rapid increase in blood sugar. The body compensates by reducing the blood sugar too rapidly, and then cortisol is released to bring it back up. So that's one source of dysglycemia. And then other people have gone to the other extreme, and they've cut their carbohydrates down too low. And what happens in this condition is that the body produces cortisol to convert proteins into glucose. So we need to have a proper ratio of protein and carbohydrate. A good ratio of carbohydrate to protein is about 2-1. And the carbohydrate protein ratio is also aided by eating about 5 to 6 small meals per day. Then in addition to dysglycemia, we need to look for inflammation. Sometimes inflammation is obvious, sometimes it's hidden, sometimes it could be a hidden infection, or sometimes the diet is the source of inflammation. If we have imbalances in fatty acids in the diet, this is inflammatory. And then besides looking for the sources of stress, we use specific nutrients like phosphorylated serine. That's a compound that's been demonstrated to lower cortisol levels. And then we also use DHEA if it's not contraindicated. We use sublingual or micronized DHEA to balance off the high cortisol. If someone has a hormone-related problem like breast cancer or fibroids, prostate cancer, then DHEA may be contraindicated. But otherwise, it's probably a good idea. And then an additional therapy to help lower cortisol is aerobic exercise. But there are a few people, when they engage in cardiovascular exercise, actually have an increase in cortisol, and this will stimulate more fat production and make it more difficult to lose weight.
Okay. How can we determine if an exercise program is undermining a weight loss effort?
What we do is we test cortisol levels in relation to exercise. The way it works is you take a saliva sample. I should have mentioned before that the way we measure these hormones, cortisol and DHEA, is through saliva samples. It's very simple. You have a test kit with four test tubes and a little cotton roll in each test tube. and you put the cotton roll under your tongue until it's saturated with saliva, and then the cotton roll goes back in the test tube, and you mail it off to the laboratory. You have four tubes you're collecting, and the laboratory measures the cortisol fluctuation throughout the day. Now, in relation to exercise, the way it works is you take a saliva specimen 5 minutes before you begin exercising. And then you go through your exercise routine. 5 minutes afterwards, you take a second saliva sample. And then 1 and 3 hours after exercise, you take additional samples. And the laboratory measures the cortisol levels from your saliva. It's actually a very accurate method for measuring these hormones. And it's okay for cortisol to increase immediately after exercise. And by 1 hour after the exercise, it should come down a bit. And at 3 hours, it should be at or below starting levels. If this is what happens, then the exercise is beneficial for you. But if the cortisol is higher after exercise at 1 and 3 hours, then the exercise program is actually a stress to the body and is interfering with weight loss. And what you need to do is vary the type, intensity, and or duration of the exercise in order to reduce the cortisol production and therefore make your weight loss more effective.
What would you do for an underactive thyroid that can manifest as fatigue, depression, irritability, mood swings, poor circulation, and an excess accumulation of weight?
Okay, what I like to do is to try and search for the underlying cause. You know, one option that's very simple is just to use thyroid replacement therapy. If you use thyroid replacement therapy, you're probably going to need to be on it for life. It doesn't get to the underlying cause of the problem. And also, if you don't look for the underlying cause, there may be other metabolic problems occurring in the body that could cause further breakdown. So what I do is I check for levels of the stress hormones which affect thyroid function. We look for nutrient deficiencies. There's probably a dozen different nutrients, if deficient, that can lower thyroid function. The thyroid is kind of like the yellow canary of the endocrine system. It's very sensitive to all kinds of influences. It's very sensitive to pollution exposure. Chlorine and fluoride can interfere with thyroid function. Fungicides that we put on our foods can affect thyroid function. Heavy metals like mercury, which you find in fish, can interfere with thyroid function. So we need to try and reduce our pollution exposure as much as possible. I like to do some testing like hair analysis to see if there are heavy metals burdening the body. And if they're present, then we need to take steps to reduce those elements coming into the body and also chelate them to be removed from the body. And I often like to use a detoxification program. This is often scientifically applied where we test the body.
Give the exact type of detox program you're referring to.
Okay, it's a food-based program, and I also use a detoxification powder. You mix it with water. It's designed specifically to help the body's detoxification pathways, and based on laboratory testing, I'll recommend other specific foods and nutrients for the individual. You know, testing may find that one person would do very well with extra broccoli or garlic for detoxification, and as far as nutrients, maybe calcium D-glucarate or glutathione. And then in addition to the diet and the nutrients, we also use exercise, sauna baths, guided imagery. And then in addition to detoxification, we have a thyroid-specific diet we use because there's quite a few different foods that interfere with thyroid function. For example, apples, millet, almonds, pine nuts, sorghum, cassava, onions, and there's also nutrients that interfere with thyroid function. Obviously, melatonin, PABA, quercetin, naringenin, all these nutrients interfere with thyroid function. So if someone is trying to restore normal function to their sluggish thyroid, these things should be avoided for a period of time. And then I also use other supplements such as the thyroid glandular, and there's actually some science backing the use of glandulars now. Glandulars contain active peptides and phospholipids.
Okay, again, you're jumping ahead as if we're a science class. We're a lay audience here. You got to explain what a glandular is. You got to explain what a peptide is. Go back to the basics.
Sorry, Gary, you're right. Okay. Although I know your audience is very educated from listening to you and your guests. A glandular is a supplement that's derived from animal tissues. So in the case of a thyroid glandular, it's a capsule that contains thyroid tissue. The one I use is from porcine source. It's been shown to be more effective than that from other species. And by taking the glandular tissue, ingesting it, it's been found that the peptides, which are small protein chains, circulate from the digestive tract in the through the bloodstream to the same gland. So when you take thyroid glandulars, the peptides tend to concentrate in the body within the thyroid gland, and this supplies raw materials for helping to repair the thyroid, and it probably also has an additional effect. There's a concept called oral tolerance, where the ingesting a particular compound, in this case thyroid, can help to desensitize an overactive immune system, which may be initiating an autoimmune attack against the thyroid. You take the substance orally, and the immune system within the intestinal tract becomes downregulated to a more normal level of function, and this in turn stops the attack on the body's own thyroid tissue. And in addition to glandulars, I use a compound called Gugulusterone. That's an Ayurvedic formula, and that's very good for restoring thyroid function, also for helping weight loss and for lowering elevated cholesterol and triglycerides, which we often see in an underactive thyroid. Then there's also some research showing that supplements of mixed mineral phosphates help to keep T3 levels up while people are on weight loss programs. One of the things that disturbs metabolic rate is going on crash diets. If you lose weight too quickly, especially if you don't exercise with the weight loss program, you tend to lose healthy tissue. And when you lose the lean tissue, your metabolic rate drops, your thyroid activity becomes suppressed. So one way people actually wind up slowing their metabolism is by not eating enough. They think if they really reduce their food intake, they'll lose weight more effectively. But you really need to prime your body with the proper level of caloric intake all the time. You should have a very steady intake of calories, try and avoid peaks and valleys in your caloric intake. And exercise is very important for increasing thyroid production and also the sensitivity of the peripheral tissues to thyroid hormone.
We only have about 5 minutes left here in this segment. Why don't you now give us a summary from A to Z, again in lay language, to let people know that it's not always their fault that they're overweight, and that much of their depression, mood swings, and broken brittle nails, thinning of their hair, can also be due to this thyroid, and that your average doctor may do a standard test and it would show normal, but it's not normal. So these people have to know that how to get the right test and then how to interpret it, because it's a little tricky. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, the routine tests that are performed are usually TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. That's the hormone, again, produced by the pituitary gland, which causes the thyroid to manufacture and release T4 and T3. Those are the other hormones that are usually routinely measured, T4, T3, TSH. But very frequently, all those tests come back normal. And as I've mentioned, imbalances in cortisol and DHEA might actually be the cause of underactive thyroid activity, or excessive levels of melatonin could also blunt thyroid activity. Now, in cases where the thyroid itself is actually the problem, and these routine tests don't pick up the thyroid sluggishness, there's an additional test that should be done, and that's called the TRH stimulation test. That's a special test. It's actually a test that was done routinely about 15 years ago, then it was abandoned when another form of the TSH test called the sensitive TSH test was developed. Doctors felt that the old TRH test was no longer necessary, but at our Manhattan office, we continue to do the TRH test, and we find hundreds of individuals who have an abnormal result on the TRH test when all the other tests results were normal. The way the TRH test works, first of all, let me say TRH stands for thyrotropin-releasing hormone, which is a hormone produced by the brain that stimulates the pituitary to release TSH to, in turn, stimulate the thyroid. Now, the way this test works is the person gets a blood sample drawn from which we measure TSH levels. Then they get an injection of TRH, the brain hormone. And it's normal for TSH levels to increase upon stimulation with the TRH injection. 25 minutes after the injection, we draw a second blood sample and measure how much the TSH increases. If the TSH goes above 15 in men or 20 in women, that's a sign of an underactive thyroid. What's happening is that the TSH is trying to drive a sluggish thyroid, so it's increasing excessively. And this provocative test is much more sensitive for picking up an underactive thyroid than the routine tests. And there was actually a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association back in the 80s that found the TRH test picked up twice as many cases of an underactive thyroid as the routine tests. Yet very few doctors do it anymore. And obviously it's a test that should be done if you have the symptoms that Gary described, the trouble losing weight, fatigue, depression, brittle nails, hair loss, menstrual problems, dry skin, constipation. Many symptoms are associated with an underactive thyroid.
Good information. If people would like more information,